the 97.9 The Hill and chapelboro.com Community Forum. Our monthly forum features Chapelboro's elected officials and community leaders debating topics affecting our community and you. The 97.9 The Hill and chapelboro.com Community Forum begins now.
Welcome into the WCHL Community Forum for the month of November. We're talking about higher education in North Carolina, focusing on the state of the UNC system as we're going through another transition with Margaret Spellings on the way out as the UNC system president. March 1st, 2016 was her first day on the job, and that will be her last day on the payroll, March 1st, 2018, although we'll be transitioning before that with Bill Roper, UNC Healthcare CEO and Dean of the UNC School of Medicine, taking over as interim president in mid-January. I'm Blake Hodge. Thank you so much for joining us on the WCHL Community Forum. We are lucky enough to have WCHL's own Aaron Keck, host of the Aaron Keck Show, to talk about higher education in North Carolina, again, with that focus on the UNC system. Aaron, thanks so much for joining us today. And just for a little bit of background, you have been in the higher education world for a really long time, in addition to your time here with us at WCHL. Can you give us just a little bit of background for that? For the
background on myself, I have a PhD.
We only have an hour.
Okay, cool. I have a PhD from Rutgers University. Got that in 2008. I've been teaching off and on in colleges and universities since really 2003 when I was at Rutgers. Taught at Duke for 2 years, and that's what brought me down to the Chapel Hill, Durham Triangle area. And I'm here now because I fell in love with the area and stuck around. And now I teach political science at Durham Tech, and it's all been within political science for the most part.
So that will be an interesting framing for this discussion, because as we talk about higher education, it is an increasingly political environment that we're living in just as a whole, but also with the structure of the governance for the North Carolina system, certainly playing a major impact there. So let's kind of...
That's a good point to start with, because you mentioned right at the top that we're going to be talking about the state of higher education in North Carolina. We're talking about it in the context of Margaret Spellings leaving and Bill Roper coming in as system president or interim system president. And one of the important questions I think that kind of lurks in the back of all of this is how much of that transition really is about the state of higher education in North Carolina, and how much of it is just differences of opinion between board members in the UNC system and the system president about just questions of control at the highest level of the UNC system, for which there's going to be an effect on the state of higher education. But is that the direct reason for the transition,
Certainly.
Or is that going to be indirect? And I think that's an important question too.
Yeah, we'll get into that here over the course of the next hour on the WCHL Community Forum, because that's certainly been a question. We've seen a lot of changeover with the Board of Governors. The board that hired Margaret Spellings 3 years ago is very different from the board that is currently governing the UNC system. So a lot of differences there that we'll get into over the course of this discussion. But reflecting back to March 1st, 2016, there were protests across the system on that day to welcome the new President Spellings. But leading up to that, there were arrests at Board of Governors meetings. There were protests that were disrupting those meetings because people were, I think, skeptical of the process, just in general, who that board was going to hire, regardless of who that ended up being. But you get a former U.S. Secretary of Education to come and be the president of the UNC system, who's coming in with a lot of background in education, obviously, but also the Republican credentials that you would expect from the Board of Governors and their political leanings, but also somebody that has generally a lot of respect among that sect of the higher education population. And then we've had some of those protests seem to dissipate over time, but maybe some unrest amongst the board of whether she is in fact conservative enough. Just in general, over the last 2.5 years, does anything stand out to you about the thoughts of her tenure and the actual impact on the system?
Yeah, I think it actually comes back to that initial question, like how much of this are we actually talking about the state of higher education, and how much of our discussion of higher education is really just a proxy for other issues. Mm-hmm. And this, I think, was very much the case on all sides with regard to Margaret Spellings. You had a couple of particular concerns about Spellings and her specific background coming in that some of the anti-Spellings demonstrators were pointing out, the fact that for all of her credentials, U.S. Secretary of Education, and all of the work that she did in the W. Bush administration, right, she didn't really have much of a background in higher education specifically. Mm-hmm. So that was something that people raised as a concern. But generally speaking, I don't think that was it. I think in 2016, a lot of the protests stemmed from this larger mistrust that people in North Carolina, and specifically progressives, had about GOP control of the state government and, by extension, the UNC system and the Board of Governors. What we had already seen in the 5 to 6 years leading up to the hire of Margaret Spellings was the GOP taking control and using that control to really impose a very, very profoundly different ideologically conservative vision on the state of North Carolina. And there was a lot of concern going in that the hiring of Margaret Spellings was an extension of that in the UNC system that up until then had been not entirely free, but largely free relative to like the General Assembly of having that ideological vision imposed on it. And over the 2.5 years that Margaret Spellings actually ran the UNC system, we've seen elements of that, but a lot of that has come still from the Board of Governors. Margaret Spellings herself, and we've heard it in her own comments as she's on her way out the door about what does she think her biggest achievements are, what does she still have left to do, her focuses have been on just the day-to-day nuts and bolts details of the state of colleges and universities in North Carolina. Really hasn't been so much about the ideological vision. And that, I think, has been frustrating on all sides, right? Because we've had this fight over HB2, where it might have been Margaret Spellings' place to take a strong stand against it. She certainly had the opportunity to do so, and she didn't. And that was frustrating for people on the left. And I think it's fair to say that part of the reason why she's leaving now is because of this this butting of heads with people on the right, many of whom are on the Board of Governors, about the fact that she hasn't been the ideologue on the right-wing side that some conservatives hoped that she would be.
Have you been surprised by her tenure in some of those ways?
No. No, I don't think so. I think she came in very much saying, this is who I am. This is what I'm going to be. She didn't strike me as an overt ideologue. And we've seen people before who have presented themselves as very moderate and not particularly ideological, who then, given the opportunity, turned ideological. Certainly Pat McCrory in the HB2 fight was one who decided to go down that road in a way that Spellings very definitely didn't. And that would have surprised me a little bit if she had done that. The fact that she didn't, to me, wasn't a surprise. I think to other people, it was a surprise, and there are going to be some who listen to this and say, what are you talking about? She was a huge ideologue for the whole 2.5 years. But I don't think that's the case, and it didn't surprise me that I feel that way.
And she mentioned that we were able to talk with her in late November as a bit of an exit interview with a group of reporters, a kind of round table where we were all able to ask questions. And she talked about that she had been very consistent with a lot of her views. And let's go and hear from Margaret directly on this, about whether she has lived up to those conservative credentials that may have been expected of her when hired by the Board of Governors.
I would say that my, you know, Republican credentials are as good as anybody's. I guess I'm a Bush Republican and have been so for, you know, my entire career. So on things like immigration and stuff like that, I've been pretty pretty consistent. So, I am who I am, and frankly, who I have been.
Aaron. Again, that is Margaret Spelling speaking with a group of reporters. We'll hear from her throughout this hour in little segments of that interview. One thing that she's talked about there and across a lot of different things is a consistency with who she is in terms of a political figure. I mean, all these jobs are political. Let's not act like that's not the case. But on certain issues, she described herself as a Bush Republican and talking about immigration and things like that. You remember we had the DACA issues during her tenure where she has also was supportive of the DACA program and has supported undocumented North Carolina residents receiving in-state tuition, because that's something they've done in the University of Texas system for years and have had no issue with.
And there, I think it's important to reflect on what she means substantively when she says, I am a Bush Republican, because I think when we think about politics, we have a tendency to think of it as this left-right dichotomy. You're a Republican or you're a Democrat, you're a conservative, you're a progressive, and that's it. But there are a lot of shades of gray in between and on either side, and a lot of conflict within those big broad categories. And when she says I'm a Bush Republican and she's talking about immigration, that is a very thinly veiled way of saying I am not a Trump Republican, because that's the one issue on which those two sides very strongly diverge. And here again, you've got a situation where Margaret Spellings is a Bush Republican and therefore kind of anathema to the left, but on an issue like immigration, being a Bush Republican also puts you on the outs with the right now, too, because the Republican Party is very much a Trump party today with regard to immigration. So being a Bush Republican on immigration kind of puts you in the middle and on the outs with both sides. And that seems to be the state that Margaret Spellings is kind of in on this issue and on others.
It was interesting to hear her say that there have been people over the course of the years that maybe I've protested her at the very beginning, and then based on any number of things, could be a little bit have changed their mind over the course of her tenure to be a little bit either sad to see her go, or at least she was a known commodity, you know,
right.
You don't know what's coming next of her being approached in the grocery store and other places around Chapel Hill to be people, according to what she said, apologizing for how mean they were whenever she was first hired. And we'll hear more from Margaret Spellings.
I've spoken with some public officials who talk about being approached in the grocery store, and this is in Chapel Hill, and it's very much a testament to who they are as public officials. If they, because you know that when people approach them in the grocery store, they have the experience of people coming to them and having this wonderful conversation, and people coming to them and yelling at them and cursing and swearing. And it really is a symbol of who this person is as a public figure if they remember the positive interactions or the negative interactions more strongly. But you know she got both.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll hear more from Margaret throughout the hour here on the WCHL Community Forum for the month of November. We're talking about higher education, and in particular focusing on the UNC system during yet another time of transition here from Margaret Spellings to Bill Roper, at least as an interim system president. And we'll talk about that possible future as well as we continue on with the WCHL Community Forum here for the month of November.
Welcome back to the 97.9 The Hill and Chapelboro.com Community Forum. Our monthly forum features Chapelboro's elected officials and community leaders debating topics affecting our community and you. Now back to the 97.9 The Hill and Chapelboro.com Community Forum.
WCHL Community Forum for the month of November is focusing on higher education in North Carolina, looking specifically at the UNC system during this time of transition. Margaret Spellings on the way out as system president, Dr. Bill Roper taking over as the interim system president. We've got WCHL's Aaron Keck of The Aaron Keck Show with us here. I'm Blake Hodge. Aaron, you mentioned a couple of times in that first segment, House Bill 2. Mm-hmm. And it was March 2016, March 1st, she took over, and I believe it was the 25th or 26th.
It's within a month.
When House Bill 2 was passed. So with all the protests that were already going on of Spellings and what people thought she might mean to the system, higher education in North Carolina as a whole, and then you just walk into that, what turns into a national, you know, daily story. And you wrote a couple of things that got a lot of attention back during that time. We also had Silent Sam come up as even more of an issue than it had been. You know, it's a constant kind of boiling point, but we've obviously seen some developments with Silent Sam that we'll get to in a minute. But how do you think generally she handled some of those bigger things that were unexpected? You know, affordability is going to be a challenge. You know, just operating an institution as large as the UNC system is going to present challenges. How do you think she handled those things?
I think she handled them exactly the way that she said that she would handle, or implied that she would handle, situations like that when they came up, which is to say that she presented herself as someone who was not an ideologue, who was not going to be sort of front and center and taking stands on issues like that, for better or worse. I mean, I personally come at issues like HB2 and Silent Sam as being the sort of issues that you do want to take a strong stand on, because there is a clear difference between right and wrong here in both cases. And I think it's kind of incumbent on people as public officials to stand up for what's right and to take a stand. And said so in the HB2 debate back in 2016, and saying so again in 2018 with Silent Sam. But for who she is, for someone who is not someone who goes out of her way and makes it a big point to take strong stands on that issue, I think, or those issues, I think Margaret Spellings did exactly what she advertised herself as being, which is to focus on the issues that she wants to focus on and only talk about these kind of hot button issues to the extent that she wants to. And I come back when I'm thinking about Margaret Spellings, and you kind of think about Carol Folt now in the same situation in Chapel Hill, thinking about Silent Sam and what do you do? How do you take a stand? What kind of position do you take? I think about it in the context of UNC Chapel Hill chancellors, Holden Thorpe in particular, Carol Folt's predecessor and now Carol Folt, having to focus on sports and athletic related issues. So Holden Thorpe in his 5-year tenure as the guy who came in, he was a chemist. He was an academic. Right. He had no intention of spending 90% of his time as chancellor focusing on some athletic scandal. And he kept getting pushed into it and pushed into it. And you could tell that he wasn't 100% comfortable with it. And he did what he could to get through. Carol Folt kind of in a similar vein, although she knew what she was getting into at that point, at least. But Margaret Spellings kind of the same situation. She comes into higher education from a particular perspective. She's not an ideologue. She's not a firebrand. She's not someone who runs to the cameras and the microphones whenever there's a hot button issue that she can have a hot take on, hashtag hot take. and then within a month, like you said, after she takes office, in the context of people already not 100% thrilled with her being there and still protests and demonstrations, now you've got not only a hot button issue coming to the forefront, but a hot button issue coming to the forefront directly implicating UNC in a way that is galvanizing national attention and focusing it on Chapel Hill and on North Carolina. And everyone wants to know, what does Margaret Spellings think? That's a real difficult position for someone to be in if that's the sort of person you are. Like, you're not a firebrand, you don't take stances on issues. I know a lot of people were really frustrated at her for not taking a harder stance against HB2. And personally, I wish that she had. She is who she is.
Yeah, and like, she's also into a new position. You're getting used to your new bosses and everything else that comes along with that in terms of the Board of Governors.
And that's also a good point, because the Board of Governors, even at that point, and you mentioned already, the Board of Governors now is different from what it was 2.5 years ago. And I think it's more conservative than it was even 2.5 years ago. But the Board of Governors 2.5 years ago is probably majority in favor of HB2. Let's be perfectly honest about that. So had Margaret Spellings taken a stronger stand against HB2 than she did, that might have been the hill she died on. Like, maybe she might have lost her job over that. And that is an easy thing for someone to say when you're standing outside. You should take a stand even if it costs you your job. It's a lot harder to be in that position and actually do it.
And that's one of the biggest takeaways I'll have from the couple of years covering Margaret Spellings. I was always curious about that dynamic with her in terms of dealing with people. She was always very good at it, I thought, in terms of the person-to-person interaction. You could see her dealing with students on campuses. She made a point to get to every campus very early on in her tenure. She told us in that interview, where we're hearing segments of throughout the program here, that what she has been told, at least by the staff, is that she's visited places like Pembroke and Elizabeth City more than any other system president, specifically, I guess, in recent memory. So it felt like she made an effort to get outside of that bubble of Chapel Hill and what that means in terms of higher education in North Carolina. But she was always very good at the kind of volleying back and forth with reporters, of asking a question and trying to get, because there was a lot of interest from the public in what does the system president think about this and its impact on North Carolina. She was always very good about giving an answer that seemed at least to answer the question, but without saying this is wrong and we need to reverse this immediately, because I think she's got a lot of that political savvy that she was bringing from D.C. into North Carolina, and that this political environment is obviously very different and has shifted a lot in recent years.
But we knew where she stood. I mean, she after all of that, she did push back against HB2 to the extent that I think she felt comfortable doing, and to the extent that she felt her position allowed her to, which again,
she certainly made clear that it was not beneficial for the system.
Right. Isn't that the context where, it was with Silent Sam, where she said, we're smarter in Texas than
Texans
we are in North
are
Carolina.
Texans are smarter,
right?
Yeah. So let's go ahead and jump to that. Because that was another one that, you know, Silent Sam, the Confederate monument on the UNC Chapel Hill campus, has been a flashpoint of protest for decades. This isn't a new issue by any means. Since 1913, when it was erected.
Yep.
But during the course of her tenure, we happened to have a white supremacist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, where a counter-protester is killed. Duke University takes down the Robert E. Lee statue, I guess is the appropriate word there, that it was outside of Duke Chapel, I believe, going in there.
Bust of Robert E. Lee?
Well, it was huge.
Okay.
It was a huge thing. The bust, the head of it was smashed in with a hammer.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
But Texas, the University of Texas at Austin, takes down the three Confederate monuments that it has on campus. Both of those are done in the middle of the night, I think it's.
And puts it up in a museum with context. Right. And
spellings, we found out through public records request emails, the article to Chancellor Folt, or else vice versa. Anyway, they get started talking about this, and her response is, Texans are smarter. and one of the things that we talked about on Wednesday was the governance structure in Texas and how that impacted their ability to make that decision. So let's listen to Margaret in her own words here. This is Margaret Spelling speaking with reporters about Silent Sam and whether she should have taken more of a stance on this during her tenure and where we are with that right now.
I'm eager to get the report like everybody. They'll unveil that on December 3rd. I know they've done a lot of good homework in terms of, assessing the security issues, getting input and thought from lots of constituencies. They've held public forums, on and on. And they've looked at and are looking at, a set of options that, will meet the requirements of the law, and maybe some that would require, statutory change. So I think they are in the process of doing a really thorough review. One of the things that I think is an interesting question, and frankly, an observation about North Carolina generally, is governance. I euphemistically say, are we organized for success? So we've got, a board of trustees and a chancellor and administration and a president and a board of governors and a historical commission and a legislature. So there's a lot of, cooks in the kitchen. And so where that all ends and whose, prerogatives, where the final authority is, I think, obviously the legislature's final authority, but whether it will, a decision will stick prior to legislative action, remains to be seen.
Not talking about whether it will stick or the final authority or legality of it. What does something like that on the campus do to the campus? So, we've had 24 arrests, several rallies from a higher education standpoint.
Yeah, I think that's what they're will address that issue in the report. What are the security concerns? What are the campus climate concerns? What are the cost concerns? you know, and have done a really thorough look at all of that. And the Board of Governors will weigh all of that when they consider the report on the 14th.
I think they're wondering, the position you have has a moral authority. And I think some people look for you to take certain stances. Do you feel you should?
Well, I think I should at the right time. I'm also a you know, person that respects process. And I think, you know, I think that's appropriate for me and for the chancellors. I mean, it would have been wrong for me to, you know, opine on what I thought should happen with Silent Sam while he had given Carolina the option to go, please have a process. Go, you know, consider these issues, consider security, consider the options. You know, for me to preempt that would have been presumptuous.
And of course, we're coming up on that deadline very shortly for some sort of recommendation to be made by the Chapel Hill campus, the administration and the Board of Trustees there. And that's what she was just referencing, allowing that process to play out. But that, Aaron, where she just, you had reporters kind of directly say, you're expected to have kind of a moral authority in this. Did you feel like that was your role? And her response being in the right time, but then she immediately shifts to talking about the process.
Yep.
We allowed Chapel Hill to have this process, so we should, I shouldn't opine about my beliefs during that stretch.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of a quintessential Spelling's answer.
That is a quintessential Spelling's answer. And I mean, we come back to two different things. On the one hand, you can't be neutral on a moving train. Howard Zinn's famous line, when it's an issue like this, and it's an issue that's really galvanizing people, and to be silent is to support the status quo, which, let's face it, is the case. And you look to a leader like Margaret Spellings to say something, and she doesn't, that there is an extent to which that's endorsing the status quo, whatever that should happen to be. At the same time, she's not wrong about the process. Mm-hmm. You, if that's the decision that's made at the UNC system governance level to say, great, Chapel Hill, we're passing the buck over to you, you come up with a plan and we'll implement it, then let the process play out. I think she's 100% right about that. Now, we're having this conversation, what, a week or two before Chapel yeah. Hill comes to the Board of Governors,
of days,
and we're all just kind of crossing our fingers, hoping that Chapel Hill doesn't come to the board with this very well thought out plan that the board immediately throws out the window and does their own thing, and then we'll see what Margaret Spellings yeah. meant when she said trust the process. Like that, if the board does that would be throwing the process out the window, and we don't want that.
Especially on the way out the door.
Yes.
We've asked this of a couple of U.S. senators, particularly mm-hmm. Republicans, who are choosing to go into the twilight of their careers rather than continue on in the Republican Party as it stands today. And a couple of them have at least started to, you know, make statements or take some sort of action. And this will be kind of Margaret's chance, I guess, because either way, she's heading out the door. And in mid-January,
yeah.
Bill Roper is going to be the acting president, and she'll be in a consulting role until March. And then she's, you know, cut ties.
But she's still the president in mid-December when
Absolutely.
it's going to be crunch time on these decisions. And the really fascinating thing, and I think she said it in her comments at that press conference the other day, was it's also going to depend on what the General Assembly does.
Yeah.
And man, we're about to enter into an interesting transition there, aren't we?
We've got a
lame duck session in just late December for this lame duck General Assembly to make a decision.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays, yeah.
We've got a lot more
we'll
to get
see.
To in the WCHL Community Forum. We're going to get into some of the more kind of traditional, I guess, higher education policy issues, talking about affordability, access to higher education, and some of the steps that have been taken throughout the tenure of Margaret Spellings as we're talking about the UNC system, higher education in North Carolina during this time of transition. Margaret Spellings out as system president, Bill Roper coming in as the interim system president, at least, and we'll talk about that future as well as we continue on with the WCHL Community Forum for the month of November.
Welcome back to the 97.9 The Hill and Chapelboro.com Community Forum. Our monthly forum features Chapelboro's elected officials and community leaders debating topics affecting our community and you. Now back to the 97.9 The Hill and Chapelboro.com Community Forum.
Lake Hodge with 97.9 The Hill, along with the WCHL's own Aaron Keck, host of the Aaron Keck Show, which you can hear on 97.9 The Hill weekdays from 3 until 7. We're talking about higher education in North Carolina, focusing on the UNC system. A new system president on the way, at least in an interim basis. That will be Dr. Bill Roper, CEO, I should say, of UNC Healthcare, Dean of the UNC School of Medicine, of course, all at Chapel Hill. Now he is moving to the system level. Margaret Spellings leaving that role. She signed a 5-year contract in March 2016. 2.5 years in, she is announced that she was going to be leaving that post. March 1st, 2018 will be her final day on the payroll as a consultant for the UNC system. So a couple of the things that we knew were going to be issues we're going to get into now. We talked about things that came up, House Bill 2, Silent Sam, that were maybe not on the agenda as she was coming in to be president of the UNC system. But now talking about things that are continuous issues in higher education, affordability, accessibility. What are you doing to help get everybody a chance to continue with that post-secondary education? And what are some avenues that are going to be extended to that in terms of embracing new technology and data and performance-based pay is something that's new to the world of academia in a lot of ways, but something that this current Board of Governors has been very interested in. So let's start with affordability. Over the course of, history, UNC as the system has been noted as being one of the best values in public higher education. It's constantly rated
number one
that way
20 years
since
in
the
a row,
beginning
yeah.
of time. So it's odd a little bit to think about affordability in that context because, as Margaret said during a couple of the segments that we've heard throughout the program here, she kind of got to North Carolina thinking, well, it's affordable. Yay, we did it. Like, let's see what we can do. But you get into the issue and there's a lot of barriers still. So one of the things is NC Promise, which was met with some skepticism at the beginning, but seems to have been gaining momentum over the course of its implementation, is $500 tuition per semester for in-state students. It's $2,500 for out-of-state students at Western Carolina, UNC Pembroke, and Elizabeth City State University. Seen a lot of huge growth in terms of applications to those universities for new students and transfers going to those universities. The issue that was initially out there was the concern that it wasn't going to be funded in a way that was going to be appropriate. General Assembly so far has lived up to its commitment in terms of funding the universities at a level that would supplement what they're losing in tuition there. And they're certainly shown a desire and an appetite for really what is at least perceived as affordable higher education in North Carolina. Now, Margaret said this, $500 is still a hell of a lot of money if you don't have $500 to be able to access. But what have you seen over the course of her tenure, WCHL's Aaron Keck, talking about focusing on affordability? Has that commitment ever been in question?
I don't think so. And I think a couple of things there. First of all, the fact that UNC is in the system, and Chapel Hill in particular, and all the other colleges in the system are held up as being these paragons of affordability in higher education says more about the state of higher education than it does about the state of things at UNC, because people still come out of UNC the best value in all the land, the whole kingdom.
Only a couple tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, $10,000 or $20,000 in debt. So that's the state of the affordability crisis in higher education, mm-hmm. that the best right. school in terms of value, you're still coming out $10,000-$20,000 in debt. So Margaret Spellings coming in knows that not only can we do better as a system, but also that the pressure that is creating the crisis of affordability is not going to go away. You've got increasing cuts to education funding at the federal level, increasing cuts at the state level, regardless of what the General Assembly wants to say. Like, relatively speaking, adjusted for inflation, funding is way down mm-hmm. now compared to where it was. Costs are continuing to go up, and a lot of that is administrative bloat, which can be addressed, but a lot of that has to do with other factors mm-hmm. that cannot be addressed just within the college and university system. The cost of construction and maintenance is going up because we have a labor shortage. That's driving up costs, things like that.
And one other thing just to mention in here, as a general supportive barometer of public education in North Carolina, the 2016 Connect NC bond passed overwhelmingly.
Yeah.
And that was a couple of billion dollars to help some of those construction projects and new buildings. UNC Chapel Hill is getting a new medical education building out of that.
So and that demonstrates the commitment of North Carolinians to funding higher education. General Assembly, it's constantly this push and pull. And coming in, I think the commitment to affordability at the from the president's office has not wavered. NC Promise was a really promising program. And I think a lot of the concern about that goes back to the concerns that people had about Margaret Spellings in the first place.
Correct.
That not that this particular program is bad, but that it's going to be a backdoor way to shut down.
If you're going to use that.
Yeah, not just Western Carolina, but also Elizabeth City State, which is an HBCU, UNC Pembroke, which
another
is
HBCU.
Right for
that was
for
a
Native Americans.
Western Carolina, remember, was added into this program because when it was initially rolled out, you're only looking at HBCUs, and people think, well, what are you doing here? Why are all of these
other issues coming in. But then if the General Assembly commits and the UNC system commits and we offer this opportunity for people to go to a four-year school with a good reputation for $500 a semester, great. And that's how it's worked out. And I think a lot of Margaret Spellings' tenure has been trying in the context of these hot button issues that keep popping up, HB2, Silent Sam, the Civil Rights Center at UNC Chapel Hill, which we haven't talked about, and a few other, the Poverty Center at UNC Chapel Hill.
And that predates her a little bit, but it talks about the environment.
Kind of to say that environment, these hot button issues that keep popping up, trying to continue to commit to these big initiatives to move the dial on affordability when there's a lot of mistrust between the players who have to cooperate and work together for these initiatives to succeed.
And we were able to talk with Margaret Spellings, a group of reporters here in late November, talking about her and her tenure and what she's feel as though her legacy is and those types of things. And we talked a little bit about NC Promise. Here's a portion of that conversation.
The We Promise campaign heralded a few things, including the NC Promise program, which is, as you know, $500 per semester tuition at three of our institutions. But not only that, we have kept tuition flat for the entire time I've been here. We've not raised tuition. We have, truth in advertising or stable pricing so that when you enter as a freshman, you'll pay that same amount when you graduate in your final year, as long as you stay continuously enrolled. We've capped fees to modest growth. So yeah, we are all about affordability.
You first saw funding for NC Promise to increase because of its success. Do you know of any other schools who've expressed interest in participating?
Sure. I know Asheville would be interested. Winston-Salem's probably interested. Fayetteville's interested. I mean, everybody would like to have $500, tuition.
Another piece of that affordability and just higher education overall is My Future NC, which is being worked on right now, and we're going to get some of the goals coming out of that here in mid-December. This seems to be the thing that she is most reluctant to hand over, or the thing that she really wished she would have been able to see through the finish line a little bit more. And this is laying out a roadmap to a post-secondary education attainment goal for North Carolina as a whole. What percentage of North Carolinians, whatever metric you want to put on this, need to be attaining some sort of post-secondary education certification, if it's a degree from community college, a four-year institution, master's degree, on up the food chain there. How many need to be there, and how are we going to accomplish that? And that is a huge question, because that is being, we're seeing every year, it seems like, more and more people saying, if you don't have these certifications or a degree, you know, it's basically like graduating high school or not graduating high school back decades ago, yeah. That transition.
And I think a couple of points there. First of all, this is profoundly important, first in terms of equity, for people who have not had that access to higher education, to be able to have a program and have a university system that's committed to giving them the opportunity and the programs that they need to get into it, especially as you mentioned, where a college education is today what a high school education was not that long ago. Yeah. And also, you also drew the distinction between a degree and certification. Certification is equally important. So community colleges are a major, major player in this, because people who come out of high school, they don't go on, they don't get a degree or certification. There are jobs to be had. You know, the unemployment rate is super low these days. Yeah. Hey, everyone's thrilled, but a lot of those jobs are in the service sector. A lot of those jobs are low paying, no benefits, no job security, no loyalty between employees and businesses and vice versa. These are not the jobs necessarily that we want to see a large percentage of our population being kind of funneled into, because they have no other opportunities. And the only other opportunities that are going to be out there in a globalizing world where Trump can say whatever he wants, GM's still going to shut down those five plants, the manufacturing jobs that we used to rely on aren't necessarily going to be as prevalent for Americans. It's either going to be the service industry, or you go into a sort of field where you need a higher degree or you need a certification. So to get people the opportunity to get those certifications and those degrees is going to be so important for the future.
And across the board access.
And across the board
things.
Access, especially when we start automating a lot of those service jobs, and then we're really in trouble if we don't have the certifications and the degrees.
So there's a lot of moving parts with a lot of these things. I don't think anybody is surprised by that, but whenever you're looking at the state of affordability for college education in North Carolina, do you feel like some of these things have moved the needle in terms of NC Promise?
Yeah, I think so. But I think and as you said, Margaret Spellings has not yet brought NC Promise to fruition yet. This is still her pet project that she's working on.
And that's going to rely on the General Assembly raising its funding levels.
I think one thing that's really cool that we've seen both in North Carolina and nationwide is not only a stronger commitment to those four-year degrees, but also a stronger commitment to the community college program, and certification programs and things like that. I think we have moved the dial on that. I think the dial needs to continue to move on that and renew the commitment to the four-year degrees and the higher education programs, the 17 campuses in the UNC system that I think has been flagging in the last 10 years or so. I say I think. Let's just drop that. That has been flagging in the last 10 years or so. We need to renew our commitment to that at the state level. But I think there has been significant progress that's made. But Margaret Spelling said it, and she's right. We're not there yet. We need to continue to work on this, and we need to constantly continue to work on this, because there is a lot of pressure the other way, and that pressure is not going to go away, nor is it going to lessen. It's only going to get higher.
And she talked about, you know, reaching capacity at some of these institutions just because of the demand. So either you're going to spread this around a little bit, or you're going to run into some other issues there. Well, we've got a little more to get to here as we will wrap up the WCHL Community Forum for the month of November. Whenever we come back, we're going to be talking about the transition, Margaret Spellings to Bill Roper, and the future of the UNC system Board of Governors, and who's going to be leading that institution from that president position. Whenever we return and finish up the WCHL Community Forum on 97.9 The Hill.
Welcome back to the 97.9 The Hill and Chapelboro.com Community Forum. Our monthly forum features Chapelboro's elected officials and community leaders debating topics affecting our community and you. Now back to the 97.9 The Hill and Chapelboro.com Community Forum.
WCHL's Aaron Keck joining us for the WCHL Community Forum this month. I'm Blake Hodge. Aaron Keck is host of The Aaron Keck Show, which you can hear on 97.9 The Hill 3 to 7 on weekdays. Talking about higher education, the state of the UNC system as Margaret Spellings is heading out of the role of president of the UNC system, Bill Roper, taking over, at least on an interim basis at the beginning. Aaron, what have we not talked about during this hour so far that you think is important?
I think some of the issues that we haven't talked about are issues that haven't really come to the fore during the Spellings administration that are still hanging there for UNC in particular and higher education in general. I mentioned the fact that we do have a significant amount of administrative bloat in UNC, and this is a higher education thing. This needs to be addressed, and we might see pressure going the other way on that because, again, as we started, a lot of the push and pull between Spellings and the Board of Governors has to do with a power play that has mostly gone on behind the scenes, but it's been enough of a struggle that some of it has come into public. And one of the aspects of that is that there are members of the Board of Governors who want more staff for the Board of Governors, right, as part of their push for more power. So the push for more administrators is actually increasing rather than decreasing, and that's going to be significant.
Board,
yeah, which is an issue for college affordability. The other thing that needs to be addressed that I don't think UNC has moved the dial very much on at all, and again, not a UNC thing, higher education thing, is the increasing reliance on adjuncts to teach the classes, the decline of tenure, the decline of the idea that being a college professor is a viable profession. So more and more people are moving away from that choice. More and more colleges are relying on adjuncts, overworked, underpaid, to teach those classes, and those two movements reinforce each other, right, and that's going to be more and more of a problem. And the third issue that also needs to be addressed is the increasing reliance on STEM fields to the exclusion or the decline of social sciences and humanities. And me coming out of political theory, which is right on the border of humanities and social sciences, this is kind of a pet issue for me. But we mentioned the future job market. One of the consequences of the future job market being what it is people are going to be bouncing from job to job. This is a new reality. The jobs that are going to be dominant 10 years from now don't even exist today. We have no idea what they're going to be. And as a result of that, if you're going to be successful on the job market in the future, it's not about knowing how to do a particular job or knowing how to use this particular computer program or knowing how to do this particular thing. You have to have big, broad, general skills. You need to be flexible. You need to be able to adapt to changing circumstances. You need to be able to think critically. You need to be able to read. You need to be able to write. And those are the things that get taught in humanities and social sciences. Yep. So if you're going to college, take humanities and social science classes because those are the ones that are going to wind up being the most helpful 20, 30 years from now. And what we're seeing in higher education is more STEM, more STEM, more STEM. Mm-hmm. If funding remains level, that means less humanities, less social sciences. And I think that is going to be really detrimental down the road. That's something that if UNC doesn't start pushing the other way on, or higher education in general doesn't start pushing the other way on, is going to be an issue long term.
You started out there talking about the Board of Governors. Margaret Spellings, during her recent interview, focused on that. The Board of Governors and this new Board of Governors, there's been a major shift, as we said at the beginning of the program, from the board that hired her to the board that's there now. It's also a little bit smaller. It's in a transition from 32 to 24 board members, which is still a very large board.
Although a nice move towards less administration. Thumbs up to that move.
And so she talked about this board and its desire to be very involved in the operational aspects of the university. I'm very curious to see how that radiates moving forward, if that's going to be a consistent theme over the next few years, and how Bill Roper is going to deal with that, because he's coming in as CEO of UNC Healthcare and Dean of the UNC School of Medicine. So he has got a lot of that kind of business running CEO experience, and we'll see how he transitions over to handling both sides of the house on this in terms of that operational side and the policy side, the higher education policy side on this moving forward, and whether he is going to be considered for the role moving forward. Right. I think that'll be the big unanswered question as we go into the spring of 2019.
All the best to Bill Roper, because I think selecting him as interim system president was the correct move. I think he's the right person for the job. He was certainly in the right place already in the process of stepping down from his position as CEO. This is one of those cheerleader moments where you're like, yeah, yeah, he's our man. If he can't do it, no one can. That second part of that is kind of important now. I'm not sure if there's anyone who can do the job better than Bill Roper right now. And if a lot of these issues continue to be even bigger issues when he's done, that says something too.
Yeah, we've got a lot to continue watching. So stay with us at 97.9 The Hill in the coming days, weeks, months, years ahead as we will be talking about the UNC system and everything that, I mean, it's a huge impact on the state of North Carolina, mm-hmm. the UNC system. There's been a very high level of public investment in that through the years. I would argue that there's been enough benefits along with it to warrant that, but we'll continue to follow that, of course, as we move forward. Aaron Keck of the Aaron Keck Show on 97.9 The Hill, 3 to 7 weekdays here on the station. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you
this
for having
month.
Me.
This is the WCHL Community Forum on 97.9 The Hill for the month of November. I'm Blake Hodge. We've been talking about the state of higher education in North Carolina with the UNC system transitioning in its leadership. If you missed any of the program, head over to our website, chapelboro.com, and you can catch yourself up on all of our community forum discussions there at chapelboro.com. Thanks so much for listening.
Thanks for listening to this month's 97.9 The Hill and chapelboro.com community forum. You can find audio of this forum and all previous forums on the on-demand page of chapelboro.com.